I checked you out too. It's funny. So you're a Cressy guy. You were one of the founders of Cressy.
Yeah. He and I were not many people. Maybe. Well, I mean, I know some people know this, but like he and I were roommates back early in our career. So, along with Pete Dupuy, opened up Cressy Sports Performance back in 2007. But before that, Eric and I worked together at a private gym in Ridgefield, Connecticut.
Yeah.
For about a year, and then we both moved to Boston, and then eventually opened up Cressy. So yeah.
Holy shit.
worked out okay.
Yeah. Pete was on here. Right, yeah.
Oh, he was. Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah. Pete is a wizard when it comes to just the fitness business side of things, and
smart man for sure.
Knowing numbers, and like he makes me feel very inept at times.
Well,
when it comes to business.
And he was telling me about like how you guys had to deal with the pandemic, and I think from what I remember, he was talking about how everything had to be like condensed, I guess, with the work schedule you guys sort of had to adapt with everything going on. Like since nobody was going to the gyms.
In full disclosure, I'm no longer at Cressy Sports Performance.
Yeah, you have your own place. You got Core.
I have my own place. And then here in Massachusetts as a general thing during the pandemic, I had to shut down for 3 months.
Jesus, man. Holy cow.
I believe they did too. And then, I think it was the end of June of 2020.
Yeah.
That we were able to open up again. Now they had a little bit more constraints because they're a bigger facility. So I think they were very limited on the number of people that were allowed into the space. With me, because I'm just a small concierge personal training studio. I could have two people in there at a time without any issue. That's really, I only really have 2 to 4 people in there at a time anyway. So, I was affected, but not quite as much,
not as much as
they were. Yeah.
Well,
it sucked either way.
Yeah. For sure. No kidding. You know, but I like the idea of having a more private personal training studio. Do you feel like that's kind of the way personal trainers need to go if they really want to kind of establish themselves?
No, I remember numerous times when I was at Cressy Sports Performance, I wrote a few blogs stating how I would never want to open up my own gym ever. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole, which sounds a bit weird given that I was one of the co-founders of Cressy Sports Performance, but honestly, one of my roles there wasn't really as one of the business guys. I was really more of a technician, and more of the, I'm just going to show up and be a good coach and
you
be an ambassador for the brand. And then, and on the side underneath that umbrella, kind of build my own thing on the side. I really wasn't interested in being part of client reach out and scheduling and trying to recruit people to come in. And I do think there's a connotation in the industry that you don't really make it until you have your own space. And I would adamantly disagree with that.
Sure.
I do think a lot of trainers at some point, they get a little career capital, they might be working at the same gym for 2, 3, 4, 5 years plus. And then think that the natural progression is their own gym. And I would say that is not the case. Like you of course can be pretty successful in a commercial gym. I mean, that's going to be contingent on a few factors, but I think this whole idea that you don't make it in this industry until you own your own gym, I would adamantly disagree. I think most gym owners would say that's a bunch of horse shit anyway.
Yeah. And I agree with you,
just like all the stress involved and, personal trainers and fitness people in general aren't the savviest of business people.
Yeah.
There certainly are many who are, but I mean, it's not natural.
What
to
the
me.
Hell,
I just,
man?
I just,
no, it's all good.
I feel like I just kind of wing it.
Yeah.
To be honest, but I think if anything, the pandemic, it got like people who go to gyms thinking about, do I want to go to a crowded commercial gym or would I rather go to this more private personal training studio where it's just me and a trainer or me and a, you know, just a few other people. And I do think the trend might be leaning a little bit more toward of that.
Sure.
And so, which bodes well into my model, because I run my own show in my studio, of course, but yeah. I also sublease the space to other trainers in the area. So if I'm not there using the space, we have a shared schedule and they can book their own like blocks of time throughout the week to train their own clients.
Nice.
And I find that there is a need for that. Cause I do think this idea of like, okay, I'm a commercial gym trainer, I have to open up my own gym because that's the next progression. You know, some people don't have the means to do it or it's just intimidating in general. So yeah. I can provide the middle ground of that. You know, it's the like, property. Okay, I'm gonna provide the equipment and the roof, etc. And you just, you know, you're responsible for, you know, growing your own brand and charging your own rates and scheduling your own clients. I'm not your boss.
Yeah.
You know, the trainers that sublease my space are vetted by me. They are very good coaches. I mean, I'm not saying they have to be a carbon copy of me, but they have
yeah,
to know
they
got to
know. Yeah. Some run of the mill trainer. My certification. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I think the pandemic had it's gotten people to latch onto that trend a little. There's a little bit of an anchor there. I think the general population is like, I have clients who are still kind of skeeved out about going to a big commercial gym, and they've only been going to me. So I think there's going to be an influx of smaller boutique style gyms opening up in the near future, in the coming months and year or so. There, I see them popping up already. So,
oh yeah. Even here where I'm at, it's so true. Everywhere, everybody's got them. But what I noticed too, is that I think, you know, if you're going to do something like that, if you're going to open up a studio, you definitely have to have the mindset of wanting to lease it out to other trainers. So it's got to be like interesting. It's got to look cool. Or else it's got nothing.
I like the idea of, I guess you can call it a co-op. I like the idea of having like-minded coaches around, because, you know, it helps me keep me on my toes. Like I can bounce ideas off the other coaches. And,
yeah.
You know, and I've been in the process of looking for a larger space here in Boston since right before COVID hit.
Sure.
You know, and I like this idea of like, okay, being able to scale my own business and allowing an opportunity for the coaches at Sublease now to broaden their schedule. Cause right now, like my current space is pretty small. Like it's 500 square feet. So there's only one coach in there at a time.
Sure.
I like this idea of being able to have two or three or four coaches working. Cause kind of like what we did at Cresty was when, you know, we'd kind of be doing like training triage, like all the clients and athletes to be on the floor training. And we were just kind of like walking around fixing stuff.
Yeah.
No, fix a goblet squat over there, fix a med ball throw over there. Okay. Let's watch your deadlift.
Don't let anybody see. Like we'll just be over here. Yeah.
please don't die and do that. So I do like this idea of providing a larger space, where, you know, I could be doing my thing with my clients and then the other coaches could be in there simultaneously doing their thing. And then also including my wife, who is a psychologist, psychotherapy at the space as well.
Nice.
We want to be able to do that as well as physical therapy. So kind of like a one-stop shop of awesome, for lack of a better term.
Well, I've never heard of the like marrying psychotherapy with fitness. That's completely new to me.
Yeah, she has her own private practice.
Oh, awesome.
And you know, and she's a meathead at heart. Like she and I have been together for I think 12 years now. We've been married for six. And you know, she's been quite the an influence on me in terms of my coaching style and kind of transitioning from like I've never considered myself like a hard-o meathead coach. Like I'm not a rah-rah coach by any stretch, but you know, I've had my instances where, you know, I just can't get a client motivated, or like they're just very stubborn and not listening to what I'm saying, or you know, and I can bounce these ideas off of her because she's a doctor of psychology and
she gets into the brain of it. Yeah.
So So I think there's a cross pollination there where certainly if someone's interested in taking care of their body, the mind, like the health of the mind is certainly part of that process too. So,
yeah.
Not that I envision us like sharing clients. I mean, but there certainly would be, you know, an opportunity there for people to like see her and then start, you know, she and I can't share the same client, but certainly she could send somebody to work out one of the other coaches at the same space or something like that. So, and obviously I just think it makes a lot of sense too, to have like physical therapy and nutrition and stuff there too, which that's not new, but the whole idea of psychotherapy,
that's brand new.
would be an element that would add a little, you know, velvet rope around the model, so to speak.
Well, it's cool too, because that maybe is the wall that every trainer hits at some point, is not understanding how to push people. What you said, that pushback, and that's everybody. I wouldn't know what to do. I don't know, in certain circumstances, and it's confusing to me.
It totally is. And I think that's one of the components of being a trainer, strength coach, fitness professional that burns us out the most. I feel it isn't so much program design,
sure,
exercise technique. I mean, it is really like our clients, and sometimes boundaries, like our clients, some clients lack boundaries. Like they, you know, they'll email you at 9 o'clock at night expecting a response, or they're not respectful of schedule and like showing up on time or whatever. You know, not to mention clients sometimes bring up very personal things that can be somewhat awkward. I think my wife she's been a massive influence on me, you know, the past decade we've been together, and she does a lot of consulting with other fitness professionals. Cause I mean, I've even when we started dating, I just kept telling her like the industry needs you, like an actual, you can go on Instagram and see many people label themselves a mindset coach, which is fine. Like I get it, but it's like, you know, just because you read a few books doesn't really make you an expert in the mind.
Yeah.
You know, my wife is a doctor, like she went to school for this. And because she's married to me, and because she's had a lifestyle lifting weights her entire life, she kind of gets the lifestyle. So, you know, I felt it was a natural progression for her to kind of recruit her into the industry. And thankfully, she's during the pandemic, I mean, she's blown up. I mean, who knew that a pandemic would make people want to talk about their feelings, right? I mean, it's just like,
oh, I'm sure the depression got to them. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, it's funny too, cause you were talking about the mindset people, and what I don't understand is even though they don't have the education and they just sort of claim on their profile that they are mindset coaches or healthy living coaches, what have you, and yet they're still popular. And maybe it's just because of the content they post, but I don't know why they would be very popular and why all that popularity wouldn't go to somebody like your wife, who is legitimately qualified.
Well, we're trying. I'm trying.
No, it's,
you know, there's people out there like Brett Bartholomew, Nick Winkelmann, who actually have degrees in psychology. And I think Brett actually might be going for his doctorate if he hasn't gotten it already. So
yeah,
there are coaches in the space who are very good. They have the knowledge base, and I have no qualms like, okay, deferring to them on anything psychological. You know, I just think it becomes a bit murky when someone labels themselves a mindset coach. Cause I think people who don't know any better will automatically assume psychology.
Yeah.
And if you're not really abreast or educated in that realm, like it can get a bit murky. So, you know, scope of practice, becomes a thing. You know, again, this is not to say that every person out there who labels themselves a mindset coach is like some seedy, swarmy person, you know, because again, I know there are many. Yes, there are many. But I certainly know colleagues of mine who aren't quote unquote psychologists, but are very well educated on the topic, you know, but they've also been coaching for 20 years. So, you know, they do have experience as well. Cause I think at the end of the day, as personal trainers and coaches, like there's a large element of psychology in what we do. So, you know, we are working with people, and there's a massive element of psychological needs that we're dealing with, and, you know, like tethering or altering our coaching style to meet the needs of certain individuals and athletes. And, you know, everyone's just wired a bit differently. So it is important to be able to ascertain that stuff and kind of, you know, like pump the brakes or throttle it up as much as we need to fit the needs of the client. But
yeah,
you know, so which is, that is all quote unquote psychological. I just think when people start labeling themselves mindset coaches and they start talking about like deep feelings and like, I'm like, okay, I get it, but you gotta be a little careful here.
Just went through a divorce. Like,
yeah, yeah. So, wow. I mean, like I said, like our clients, they bring up personal things and,
yeah.
You know, I've had clients bring up eating disorders. I've had clients bring up alcohol issues and,
sure.
You know, certainly I'm not like boasting it to the world or anything, but you know, I'm not educated in that stuff. So if anything, what I've learned, I mean, just being a good listener, that's really what it comes down to. I'm certainly not like providing any feedback like, oh, well, I think with alcoholism, you should be doing, you know, it's just like, I'm not doing that.
You got to try this. Yeah.
But there is an element of listening and like, you know, and then also referring out if you need to. Like, I mean, I've asked my wife to help me refer people to get help on certain issues and,
yeah.
At the end of the day, it's about your client's interests. And if they know that you have their best interests at heart, I think that's never a bad thing.
Is that what you think develops sort of more intrinsic motivation from them? Because I can imagine there's only so much you can give as a trainer. And at the end of the day, it's maybe you're working to like bring out their own motivation in exercise. So
I think at the end of the day, the goal, I mean, my wife would be the perfect person to talk to on this, but like at the end of the day, hint, wink, wink.
Yeah. There you go.
At the end of the day, intrinsic motivation is kind of what we're after. Like we want to get people to be intrinsically motivated to lead a healthy lifestyle. Like to not rely so much on extrinsic factors, like, you know, how someone looks or, you know, compliments or, I mean, those are always nice to have. But you want to, you kind of want to nudge people in the direction of like, just intrinsically being like, working out is just part of my being and fiber. Like, that's just what I enjoy doing. Hmm. You know, and there's a myriad of elements to that, but certainly when it comes to motivation, I always just go down to competency, autonomy, and relatedness. So,
nice.
You know, competency is just helping people feel it, like, you know, giving them a little bit of choice, but then making sure that they don't feel stupid doing something as well. Hmm. You know, that, you know, and making, you know, and giving someone an autonomous is like that, you know, they got this, like, you, that's part of being a coach, is like getting to the point where, you know, if I have a client and they're traveling for work, I would love for them to be able to walk into a hotel gym and just
know exactly what to do.
No, and just like figure out a workout. Wow. Like,
right on
to me that yeah. if I get somebody to that point, like I feel like I've done my job well as a coach.
Yeah.
You know, and to get somebody to that point, I mean, there's a lot of layers with that too. I mean, that comes down to, you know, exercise selection and doing the assessment and like, you know, figuring out, okay, when I'm writing a program from somebody, I want to make sure that I'm taking their health history into context, of course, their injury history and their ability level and their anatomy, and just setting them up for as much success as possible. Like,
yeah,
I can't really remember the last time I tested somebody's one rep back squat on day one. It just doesn't happen. Like, you know, cause most people that there's,
let's go.
It wouldn't feel great. Yeah. So, but I certainly want my clients squatting and deadlifting and, you know, pushing stuff and hoisting stuff and throwing stuff. And it's just me finding the correct entry point to those movement patterns.
Yeah.
In a way that feels good, helps them feel safe, helps them feel powerful and stable. And then we just progress from there. And all that is under the umbrella of, you know, competency, autonomy, sure, relatedness. You know, and that all helps with the motivation. Cause I mean, no, I'm not going to force feed exercises to clients. Like if someone comes in saying, I hate deadlifting, I mean, certainly a part of my soul cries, like, I'm like, oh no, yeah. Like, you hate deadlifts. But yeah. It's like, okay, well, I'll dig deeper. Like, why do they hate that movement? Is it because it feels bad, or maybe they were taught it incorrectly, or maybe they had a bad experience with a previous trainer. Like, I don't know.
Hmm.
Maybe there's somebody who feels like the only deadlift is, with a straight bar from the ground. And I tell people all the time, hey, listen, if you're not a competitive powerlifter or a weightlifter, you don't have to use a straight bar to deadlift, and you don't have to pull it from the floor.
Yeah.
Like, you can use a trap bar. We can deadlift a kettlebell. We can, there's a whole host of variations we can use here that will better fit your needs and ability level. So that's part of motivation. Like,
yeah.
And that's part of being a coach.
Well, it's yeah. And I fell into that pitfall too, where you don't teach choice. And I like that you're, That's probably what builds the intrinsic motivation, is this ease. Choice. Yeah.
Choice is massive. I mean, that's something as simple as, like, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, when somebody hires me as their coach, like, I'm more or less the boss. Like, they're hiring me for a reason. Like, they don't want to do the thinking. They're letting me do the thinking for them. Here's your program. Let's go. However, giving somebody choice helps them have a little bit of skin in the game with their programming, and has a little bit more their motivation there.
Autonomy.
So again, that might be a scenario where it's like, okay, they might walk in, and I write programs for all my clients. Like, I try to individualize it the best I can, but then sometimes I'll just say, they'll come in, I know it's a lower body session. So say, you know, we're going to hit lower body pretty hard today. All right. You get a choice today. We can either go trap bar deadlifts, or we can do some safety squat bar squats. Which one would you rather do today? That's and to awesome. Me, if to them, if they get fired up saying, yeah, let's do some safety bar squats, I want to hit those pretty hard today, chances are they're going to probably have a better session than me force feeding the one exercise they really not feeling that day.
Cause they're going to enjoy it. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, in another great example, it would be, oftentimes at the end of a session, it's okay, you do what I want you to do. Like, there's a reason why I wrote this program. You're going to get the meat and potatoes done. Great. Now we have 10 minutes left. All right, we're going to do some arm farm, or we're going to do some glutes. You know, like, what do you want to work on? They might say they want to work on some shoulders or whatever. Like, okay, let's do that. And I'll whiteboard them. Meaning I'll just write like this little quick circuit on the whiteboard that they can do to finish their session.
Sure.
And, you know, if I can get one of my female clients to, you know, hit their squatting or deadlifts pretty hard, but then I make their glutes very sore at the end by giving them a glute circuit, like, and they leave happy. Like, to me, that's a win.
Yeah.
That's and they something. get a little choice in their program. So, I mean, this isn't something that happens daily. Like, I'm not doing it every single time they walk in. Like, again, I'm the boss, but I do think there's some importance there that a lot of trainers miss out on in terms of just giving people a little bit more skin in the game.
There's got to be like a good interplay between client coach and you got to work on it together in a sense.
Yeah. Your team. I mean, that's a great way to put it. Yeah. It's like, it's a two-way street there. Like, it's very much a team effort. Like, I joke that I'm the boss, but I'm cognizant and aware that it is a little give and take. Like,
it's true.
You know, I've been coaching people enough where I can feel like if they're not feeling an exercise, or they just feel like, I don't like this one. I mean, again, I don't have that much of an ego that I can't just say, okay, well, let's use this instead. Like, not a big deal.
Are there ever any points in time where somebody comes back and again, I realize this doesn't happen all that often, if ever, you know, if you're a good coach and everything, but do people have a tendency to place blame on you if for some reason they don't get to where they want to be?
I think it has happened. It hasn't happened in a while.
Yeah. Cause you're good at what you do.
Well, yes, but certainly if somebody comes in and, you know, they feel like they're not making as great progress as they should be, or, you know, well, I'll sit down and let's talk about it. And I'll say, well, okay, so from what I see you once a week or maybe twice a week. You know, from what I can tell, like, you're doing great. Like, you're hitting your sessions. Like, are you doing those corrective exercises that I told you to do on your own, or what? How are your workouts on your own going? And I'm not really doing them. And it's okay, well, maybe that's part of the issue. Like, you know, what do you think about that? Like, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, I'm not here to press blame on them. And again, I'm very much in tune with like, okay, I want to champion success as much as possible. Like, I'm not here to put them down
for sure,
but I'm also not timid to give a little tough love when needed. But that's under the caveat that there's got to be some love there too. It can't just be like, oh my God, you're horrible. You haven't done your workouts on your own. Like, and it's like, okay, well, why is that? Maybe there's, you know, work has been killing them, or maybe that their kid hasn't been sleeping great, or maybe they just, I don't know, who knows? We're in a pandemic. Like, I mean,
yeah, it's true.
People's priorities are a little bit different, you know? So,
that's a good point.
So yeah, but certainly when that does come up, when someone brings up this issue, like, you know, I feel like I've been working out with you for 2 months and I haven't really lost any weight, or
yeah.
And I said, well, weight is one thing, fat loss is another. So let's talk about that. Like, you know, are your numbers going up in the gym? Yes. Do your clothes fit tighter? No. Well, okay, what's the problem?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just a bit of context. You know, you have to give them a different perspective on how to look at the issue.
I like that.
You know, I get a lot of people who come to me, like I have a lot of self-selecting clients. Like they, you know, I have a lot of content out there. So people read my stuff. They kind of know what they're going to get themselves into when they come work with me.
Sure.
Certainly I get a lot of people, I'm interested in getting stronger and moving better, whatever. I also get a lot of people who get referred to me from physical therapy. Like they went for an issue, they got cleared, and now they want to strengthen. So, you know, whether we're talking lower back, knee, shoulder, whatever, you know, I get a lot of people who might have a history of back pain or might have a history of knee pain. And I tell them, listen, like pain is like rehab in general is not linear. Like it isn't like you're going to start on day one and it's just going to get better, 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 better. I mean, there's going to be peaks and valleys and ebbs and flows, but as long as the trend is moving in the right direction, that's what we're after.
Yeah.
You know, like we have a discussion on pain tolerance and like, should we be training with pain or not? And I would say, yes, there's going to be a tinge of discomfort and pain involved here, but you know, I don't want it to get above a 3. What I mean by that is
you don't want it to get 10 too far.
If 10 is like, you know, like a shark just bit off your left arm and a 1 being like, not a big deal. I don't want your pain tolerance to get above a 3 during your session or the day after a session. If that is the case, we're fine. Like the body needs a little bit of pain in order to get better. But it has to be dosed accordingly. Like it shouldn't be a 7.
It's true.
You know, on a daily basis.
Keep pushing. So, keep going.
Yeah. So even like to that, like it's just constant communication with the client or athlete. I'm like, okay, what are we doing today? How's this going to transpire into the following week, into the following months? And it's just constant communication. I mean, it's weird. If you actually discuss things with your clients, it's weird how it just kind of,
it works itself out really. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I can imagine though, probably run into some people do you run into people who do have just a crap ton of pain with anything you make them do?
Sometimes, sometimes you just, it's a, you know, if you ever watch like the movie, The Program, are you hurt or are you injured? Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
It's a football movie
from like the early 90s. It's from like 1992. So there's probably like,
it's a deep cut.
One of the players and one of the main characters in the movie is a running back, and he get like they're at football practice and he gets leveled by a tackle, or whatever. And he's on the ground and the coach comes up to him, you hurt, you injured. And the guy is like, oh, what do you mean? Well, if you're hurt, you know, get up and go. But if you're injured, then you're going to go see the trainer.
Yeah. You gotta be wheeled off. Yeah.
So, and with how that kind of, goes into this discussion is if I'm just like, listen, like, are you in pain? Like, are you injured or are you sore? Are you feeling stuff?
To differentiate like where that pain is coming from.
There are many people who are new to strength training, who just don't know the difference between delayed onset muscle soreness.
Yeah.
You know, your muscles being sore, which is not comfortable. I get it. It sucks, but, and being hurt. there's even a discussion there. So, and that's definitely a thing. But you know, that's again, but I'm always trying to check in with my clients. Like I'm always saying, where do you feel that exercise? How does that feel? You know, and especially if I know that they're with me because of a pre-injury or a predisposing injury, you know, I'm checking in on that too. Like, you know, how's that feel? Are you above a three? You know, blah, blah, blah. And it's just constant check-ins.
That's cool. Yeah. It's keeping up with that. And then also too, I'd imagine people want variety, but you can't really give them too much variety whenever you're in the gym with them. Like I'd imagine that's kind of hard to balance because you were talking about choice and we covered that, but then keeping them on a real strict schedule that does involve pretty classic motions that they should be doing anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like I admittedly will say the bulk of my programs are pretty boring.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. I've always said that I think the best progress is going to be from monotony.
Yeah, and I agree with that. That's the only way you could do it.
Yeah. And this is not to say that I'm against variety or like just doing something for the fun of it and whatever. But you know, I think most of the time because you know I'm interested in helping people improve their deadlift or improve their squat or improve their bench press or whatever. You know, the best movements that are going to do that is a deadlift and a squat.
Yeah. The things that are those things. Yeah,
exactly. And then certainly, you know, we have to look at, okay, where does your technique falter or break down within the context of a deadlift or a squat or a bench press? Okay. Knowing that, okay, what are going to be some of the accessory movements that are going to address that? So to me, it's like, if we want to get better at deadlifts, for example, okay, we're going to deadlift. We're going to find the deadlift variation that best suits your ability level, again, your injury history, your anatomy. That's going to be step one.
Yeah.
But then, okay, when we start getting more load on, where does your technique break down? Like, okay, where is it off the floor? Is it at lockout? Is it on the way down? And then that knowing that information, that dictates what follows, like what their accessory work is going to be. So again, it's just, I'm using a lot of times I'm using the session or the assess. I mean, that's what I do during an assessment is I look at those things. I say, oh, okay, well that I just watch them move. And then I just kind of figure out, okay, these would be the exercises that will best fit that. And then let's hammer those. Like, that's awesome. We don't need to change the exercises every week or two or three or four necessarily. Like because of my business model, I do update programs on a monthly basis. However, some things stay the same throughout. Like,
you just keep improving.
Trap bar deadlift, goblet squats. And then I might change like the warm up and I might change some of the accessory work just to, you know, yes, break the monotony, of course, but we're still training patterns for the most part. So,
that's excellent.
Yeah, to me, one of the big mistakes a lot of beginners make and even intermediates is like they're changing up their exercises way too often because then they don't give it time to stick. They don't give themselves enough time to adapt and master a movement pattern or an exercise, and they never see progress because they're changing things up every so often.
And then the client won't see progress. They're not going to notice any change.
Exactly.
You know?
So you know, and I found honestly that most of my clients actually prefer like a pretty cut and dry, boring program. As long as they see their numbers going up or they're improving in some capacity, they're pretty happy. And where the variety comes from is what I discussed earlier about, okay, well, maybe at the end of your session, we'll do an arm farm, or maybe we'll throw in a glute circuit or whatever. Like that's kind of where the varieties come from. They've done what I want them to do, and I'm going to give them a little bit of what they want.
Yeah.
So that's where the variety comes from. But for the most part, I feel most people most of the time don't need as much variety as they think.
And that's cool. It's interesting to see that, you know, that they could enjoy just a basic plan. And so that's pretty optimistic, you know, whenever you're a new trainer trying to get clients or something, that you could do that comfortably and still be interesting, you know?
I think if you're a new trainer, I mean, in my experience, I think where a lot of new trainers miss the boat on is they try to impress their new clients too, and they try to like, I'm going to show you all these new fancy exercises and stuff that the client can't even really do well.
Yeah.
To me, I think if you spent more time, like, again, showcasing like what they can do very well like they're going to be more motivated train.
That's true.
Because I can do this. Oh yeah, I can do this.
It's easy.
Rather than showing them like super advanced exercises that you got on Instagram that week.
Yeah.
I think
that is how the world works.
Like human nature is human nature. I get it. We like bright, shiny objects. I get it.
Yeah.
However, in the context of strength and conditioning and improving strength and mobility and what have you, monotony wins the day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the missing ingredient, because we've lost it nowadays, I'd imagine, just with all the variety offered. It's
oh yes.
Going back to a simplistic approach is what's necessary. Shit.
Oh yes.
That's true.